Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung. The future is changing faster than even before, whether through technological progress or unforeseen events such as the global corona pandemic. This has shown that designing a building is about much more than just the aesthetic and functional parameters. Since its foundation over 30 years ago, UN Studio has always taken a different approach, with an experimental and architectural approach that has been refined over the years, from the master plan to the design object. The task of designing a completely new district in a grown European city is rarely offered nowadays. A great opportunity to look into the future viability of cities and their parameters. In today's podcast episode, we talk about how architecture and urban planning can make people healthier and happier with our guest, Ben van Berkel from UN Studio. We are Diana and Katharina from Jung.
Hello and welcome to our Jung Architecture Talks podcast. Nice to have you with us, Ben.
Nice to be with you. Thank you for inviting.
UN Studio has studios in Amsterdam, Shanghai, Hong Kong, and now another office location in Frankfurt. What was the reason for this decision?
I've already a long time history with the city. I've been teaching there for a while, actually more than 15 years. And as you know, we over the last years were invited to do a competition for the Project 4. We were getting more and more involved in the projects in Frankfurt. And after the urban project we won for the location, then there was a second competition introduced for an international competition also for the building forms of the project. Luckily enough, I thought I lost the project because I won first the project and then I thought I might lose it. And then luckily enough, we won that too. So that was a major achievement and luck we had together with the client for winning this project. And I mean, it's a big project. And we decided for that reason to collaborate with a local office, HPP. We believed that it was very important to have also a local office with that architect and that with such a big project that we would collaborate on the location. But my belief is always to use these projects to try the opportunity to implement an opportunity of that what we have in also the studio of Amsterdam to make sure that we, when we set up a satellite office, that we copy more or less some of the mother's main office in order to make sure that we are not only purely doing project office work in other countries. Because that I've done before, and the danger is that you invest a lot of money in setting up an office there, and you know how it is. And then suddenly you have lost all that investment in only the project, and then you lose who knows also your profits. So we use always the opportunity there to make sure that we can expand a bit on our own and do some more work in Germany in general. And that's luckily enough happening at the moment.
So before we step into the project that we are also interested in, we would like to talk about the city of Frankfurt and your relationship to it. As you said, you taught in Frankfurt at the Städel School for a long time. What makes the city so special and what do you actually like about it?
Frankfurt is a wonderful city, actually. It needs a bit time to discover that it is wonderful because in the beginning you think it's a city of expats and highly office-oriented, especially with this quite amazing... unusual skyscraper-like type of city you actually don't find anywhere else in Germany, in a way. After a while, I find it actually quite an amazing city. Maybe because you have to discover the culture, the quality of the artworks you can find in the museums there. The public life is quite underground but visible when you are there longer than one year. You know, for instance, in the summer, I love it that everyone is using this mine area along the border as almost as a beach, and people gather and enjoy the life as if you live on the beach. It's a bit, so it reminds me then of a Dutch city in a way. From restaurants to our culture to actually music or opera. I went often to the Opera House. It's a fantastic place. I've always enjoyed staying in Frankfurt. It's a very powerful city. And it's less what I thought in the beginning, that it is a city of people who just come in and out. That is actually not at all the case. It's also quite an old city in a way, with a lot of beautiful history.
According to Asian standards, the Four project is probably small, but for Germany, it is a huge project right in the middle of the city. What makes this project so special?
It's really a very unique site to begin with. The location is on the old Deutsche Bank area, and you have to imagine that area was closed off for, I think, more than 40 years, so nobody could enter that part of the city. And it's actually a very strange corner of the city center, because if you come from Goetheplatz, I believe it's called, you go into that part of the edge of the city center, but it's a little bit after 9 o'clock in the evenings. It's not your favorite area, or it's not the most liveliest area, let's say. And this is what we thought was so important with the project we could introduce there. With the discussion with the client we had, we discovered that it is very important to link this location, what is actually maybe not the most liveliest, into a more livelier location, whereby with a central plinth and a square in that plinth, in the middle of that plinth, of the project, we have four towers who all react to the four neighborhoods in the area. And the four towers, you probably know that the skyline is almost the landmark of, or the logo almost of the city. That is, Frankfurt doesn't have one building presenting itself as a symbol for the city, but it's the skyline. And I've always been so proud that we changed that skyline. It's got to be definitely changed with these four skyscrapers in the future image of the skyline. But that's not maybe the essential quality of the project, of course. But the quality is that it activates the site, that it will be a right mix of user groups who will come there, people who are interested in coming to a cafe or restaurant, they can go there. The central square will be activated with these programs, call it quick and slow programs we introduce in these plinths. Then there is the mix of social housing, mid-range housing and high-end housing to be found in the site. What I find also really great, that the city of Frankfurt supports these ideas, and even it's part of the regulations if you generate so much program onto the site. And yeah, and a lot of other mixed from two hotels, not too big. And a lot of flexibility, of course, in the way how we planned it, because in a time like this, you never know what's going to happen in 1 or 2 years' time. I find it really one of the most interesting projects, where maybe the city was the most enthusiastic about also, is that if you see the four towers in the future being represented in certain corners from the way how you move around the site, and sometimes they melt together in certain other corners of the way how you approach the site. So sometimes they melt together, or two towers melt together, and sometimes then you see three towers melting together, and then one is standing apart, and this kind of separate family-like organization of the different scales of towers, they have a family typology, you could say, but they also have their individual quality in the way how they can be separated while you move around the site. So it's, I mean, I think that's one of the most sculpturally high-end qualities we could achieve with many studies we did over the years.
You're describing a lot of different tasks. What were the biggest challenges in the four?
One of the most biggest challenges is that we have a very small site. It's a very compact site. We wanted to make sure that from each apartment or each view, that you would not have a building next to you who would become an obstacle. So what we did was to do endless studies in how particularly the apartments and the office spaces and the hotel rooms would not actually be having the obstacle of one tower being in the way of the other. And then, of course, I mean, imagine all the infrastructural difficulties related to this, of where do you park, where do you enter, how do you make this central part of the plinth very very lively. I mean, these things were, I mean, the biggest challenges. You know, building on a site like this is super, super difficult in the sense that it takes a lot of clever management work to get the cars in, the lorries in, to do the foundation work on the site here, where we are working on right now. So it's, building-wise, it's also quite a big challenge.
And also the facade is supported with great effort, right? Because there are still listed elements on the site. How do you actually deal with the existing?
Partly of the existing we could take away because the city planners were highly interested to keep some of the old buildings or the former buildings into the site. But luckily enough, some of their structures were not so good. So, yeah, we had to take it away because the quality was too low. It's holding up on the one hand and then going into the ground on the other hand, making sure you don't have too much vibration. That's why we have so many contractors involved in this project, with luckily enough a main contractor. But it is a very challenging, like you say, project.
And when we talk about the future of cities, we noticed a statement on your website. We create designs that are adaptive as well as resilient. The result is healthier buildings and cities that improve quality of life. Can you please explain this a little bit more detail to us?
What we mean by adaptive is also a form of new flexibility. Like, for instance, lately in Amsterdam, we designed several office buildings who are also easily to be transformed towards housing. And what we do is that we design the buildings so as if they could also accept a housing plan and an office plan. So the cores, the stairways, the potentials for the way how we work with balconies, potential balconies in there are all possible in this project. For instance, a tower what we have built here on the south axis. That's about adaptability, and I can mention maybe later even more. But the quality of life is more related to the human-centric approach towards design. We've, of course, always believed that in a way that architecture is background. It's for people who you design. It's not for architecture for its own sake, I would say, is always bad architecture because then it doesn't serve you as a person. Yeah, and that's why we have always liked to build on a history of architecture, a humanistic approach towards architecture, where you place the people who live or work or operate within the city, that you place decentrally in your design.
And what adjustments do we need to follow in order to make cities sustainable, thus healthier?
I mean, today, luckily enough, we have an agenda who is clearer than ever than before. We have, luckily enough, a political power, or how to say, set of instructions who help us to make cities more sustainable. So where I, who tried already 5 or 6 years ago to talk about sustainability or circularity in architecture, you know, it was not at all interesting for fascinating for even politicians or city planners. But today we have to. I mean, it's a regulation. We in Holland, we are going off the gas. We cannot build any new house anymore with gas lines. We have to build from now on energy neutral housing projects in Holland. We can't go for not this approach anymore. I mean, so you would not get your building stamp from the government if you have not an energy neutral building. So although I've always promoted circularity and energy transition, healthy environments, because that's my main topic, I'm heavily interested in how to make the built environment more healthier, but also healthier on many levels, like from the social aspect towards the physical aspect and the mental aspect. And like with social health, that you stimulate people more with building up a powerful community and that people can meet and that you don't make monofunctional areas. What we did so much in the 70s, 80s, or even I would say in the beginning of 2000. Or with physical health, that I promote now much more walkability in buildings. That and it's known. I mean, if you would take every day, 20 times or let's say only 8 times a staircase, that will reduce the risk of getting a heart problem with close to 20% if you take 8 times a staircase every day. So I hide my elevators lately in buildings. Maybe I should explain also that with the facts I have right now with air systems we have used in buildings, whereby we can prove that we were able over the last 5 years, 6 years to reduce sick leave, for instance, 20%, close to 20% in office environments. So that's really amazing. And I'm very proud of that. But maybe it started at Harvard, because when I started to teach at Harvard so 6 years ago, and was getting this wonderful chair there. I was going there every other year. So not every year, but every other year. And teach with roughly so 12 students the topic around health and the built environment. And that's how I came to all these ideas with my students. And use a lot of technology also to promote the testings of how we can make the environment much better indoor. Because, I mean, we talk a lot about outdoor environments and that we need to reduce CO2 emission and all that and stick stuff, as you know. But we forget sometimes how bad the indoor environment is. It's even worse, I would say. And particularly there, I did a lot of research. And that's what I mean. Today, I think that making environments healthier should be guided by a set of principles who are easily also to be connected to sustainability. Because if you don't do that, I've noticed that then a lot of clients or even governments are not so interested in bringing in circular materials, for instance.
We found one more sentence on your homepage that says, technology moves fast, but construction is slow. Is that the reason why you established your own research unit, UN Sense, in order to push forward the too slow development?
It's just a healthy provocation towards the whole profession, you could say. It's also a way how I mirror myself and everyone in the profession to hopefully make clear that we are all living in the iPhone phase, I always say. But we maybe as a building industry, we are somehow somewhere in the Walkman phase still. And that is maybe very a bit an aggressive maybe a provocation, but what I mean by that is that we need to catch up in the building industry. I don't know if you've seen any studies on how over the last 20 years we have become more or less efficient, better to say. Mm-hmm. In the building industry, we are not moving up. If you could go to any other kind of manufacturing system, from fashion to any other kind of industrial products, cars, etc., you see a curve going really, going positively up in the way how you've developed the efficiency models. But the building industry is very slow and very, I would say traditional. And it's changing. That's what I have also to say, because that's why I put my own provocations in brackets. It's not so that we are not moving. I mean, 3D printing is coming along and you can already find in the world, luckily enough, 3D printing units and buildings around. But that's not it. In the whole system of the way how we operate as an industry, we need to move on. Actually, I'm at the moment in a task force group advising the government also here in Holland with a lot of other fantastic specialists in the field. And we all think with the government of how we can change the regulations also. So that you instead of that you go for highly traditional tenders who are organized all around the efficiency of cost, that you maybe change that model in a way whereby innovation is more stimulated, of course, within a framework of cost, but that anyone, let's say if you have four or five parties who you invite and you say, I mean, on the level of modular building or circular building or sustainability or health, come up with new ideas. And if you could do that within a particular framework, give you your best price you can give for that project and stay in the range of that range the client or the government can give, that is challenging the building industry much more than going for the traditional European tender. Actually, did you read it over the last week? I think that the European government is thinking about, what is the name of our fantastic lady?
Angela Merkel.
No, Angela, not Angela. She said that we need to change in the building industry and let's build up a new Bauhaus, as she called it.
I know that was von der Leyen.
Von der Leyen, sorry.
She's in Brussels.
Yes, yeah. She. As I read it this morning, actually. She said, let's build up a new Bauhaus to make sure that we are not, with the building industry, producing 40% of the emissions we are producing in the world. I mean, the building industry is really, I mean, that's a very beautiful mission. But don't forget, that's again a mission, and that's why we need to have new schools and new education systems to make sure that we implement this in the right manner. And for instance, the example I gave you about new forms of tendering systems and other regulations we need to implement is, I think, the essence and the only way to change the culture of the way how we work in our fields, you know, in a less linear way. I do also believe that we will grow much more together in the future, you know, from engineers to, I mean, I've even futurists in the office. I work with data specialists. My profession is already expanding so heavily that even, you know, even I work now with the whole financial industry to make sure that I can engineer the cost much better around sustainability and circularity and everything to do with water in building the built environment, so that you have these specialists working with you on making sure that whenever we do a cost analysis of the projects we do, that you also prove that you can generate much more value with these type of new buildings than the way how we built in a traditional manner.
So you mean much more value, not only for the people, but for everybody who's like integrated within this project, so even for the nature, for the city, etc.
Yeah, but don't forget the finances, because that's what I've learned, because that's it. Our profession is so financially driven that if you are not coming with an efficient model there, presenting to the parties you work with, then nobody will trust that sustainability or all the topics we mention of working with health in the built environment. Yeah, what does that exactly mean? You know, you get always these answers. And if I have my numbers, then suddenly, you know, the world changes in the mind of these clients we work with.
But would you say that this should be something what students should be already trained?
That's what I'm saying. That's why I think that's what she meant also with the Bauhaus, that we need to we need to re-educate and bring in much more women in our field, and also make it much more attractive to operate in the building industry, because it's seen as a kind of an unattractive, old-fashioned profession. But it is, I mean, it's a beautiful profession, as we all know.
Ben, you seem a very highly motivated person. And following all of those topics, how do you maintain your motivation over such a long period of time?
I don't know what it is, but it is it's not my motivation, but it is really that I believe in these things. You know, I believe it's not, I'm driven by the things I do, but it's only possible by the fact that it is so much in my blood and my character to keep on producing. I can't really also stand the difficulties in a profession. So that's why I all the time think, well, I can always help because I've more than 30 years of experience. My best time is still to come.
So your motivation and your interest equals your belief.
Yes. Yeah, and I balance it out. Don't forget, if I, you might think I work 12 hours a day. Maybe I do. But also I find, luckily enough, in my own life, a lot of time also to get inspiration. And I read a lot and I paint. I travel a lot. I'm someone who also makes sure that I keep myself in the right balance, because you know, whenever you run a company, or you know, we have more than 300 people, we need to make sure that we stay fit on all the levels.
You have used the lockdown period during the pandemic to reflect on the impact on society, social and structural. What are the themes of the series, and what would you say should we start with immediately?
Maybe I mentioned it already, but I should say it in the right order. I think it's clear that now we all know that a better indoor and outdoor environment, and healthy indoor and outdoor environment, is the future. I mean, it's the future. Sustainability is part of it, but I would place health even on top of that. So that means healthier schools, you know, with better air systems. Not having 30 kids in the class, you know, where air systems are not good. And then I'm talking not about the 3 years old, but I'm talking also about, you know, the ones who are much older, let's say, the especially the age where we now, here in Europe, we see now the corona is hitting the middle generation. That's happening a lot in Holland, at least. So it's clear there it is a problem. But I'm talking in generally also about not health in the sense of we need to look fit and, you know, we need to sort of, you know, it's not about the identity of health. It is more about feeling yourself good in the city so that you can make more space for pedestrians, taking the cars out of the center. I've done so many studies on, for instance, the ring roads in many cities to make them more attractive. If we will drive electric in the future, then we can make hubs where you can park your electric car. You can take a little pod of a bicycle. I mean, making cities more attractive through bicycling and walking is, I would say, is dealing with these topics of health. So I mean, let's start today. And luckily enough, a lot of politicians do that, believe that now too, luckily enough.
But aren't the Dutch people like the kings of the street concerning pedestrians and cyclists, etc.? I mean, you are one of the strongest countries thinking about cyclists within the cities, no?
Yeah, they can kill you. Yeah, they, you know, now we have these kind of e-bikes everywhere and it's going so fast, you know, and these kind of special... urban arrows, you know, for kids. Have you seen these kind of big kind of bicycles with you know, a place where kids can sit in? They're electric and they go so fast. But anyway, I mean, it's we luckily enough we are very good there, but still I think we can still become better. Before the COVID period, Amsterdam was overcrowded. Became almost a type of comparable to city towards Venice. So crowded over the last years that now everyone is thinking, oh, we hope that it's not coming back as it used to be. And for that, we need to change a lot of things. And it's not about the tourists. It's about the way how the amount of visitors, and not only from other cities, but also from other countries, but also from our own country also, people came there so intensely that they were distributed always over the same areas in the city. And that's where we rethink now these kind of qualities. And with technology, you can all do that. Eh? We know now with technology where people move, and you can steer that in a much better direction.
If you would have the chance to decide to have lunch with someone tomorrow, who would that be?
Oh, gosh, I have a whole wish list. Yeah, there's so many people I wish. You know, sometimes I think I should be careful with dropping names because, you know, I'm telling you this, that I have so much interest in reading books, science, philosophy, You know, I mean, one of your philosophers I really love is Peter Sloterdijk. You know, I wish I could have a lunch with him. And then the second person could be David Lynch, you know, the movie maker. And we have a lot of things in common because he paints also. But I love also music. So if there was Jaap van Zweden, you know Jaap van Zweden, he's the director of the New York Orchestra. I mean, he lives around the corner. I know him and I've met him several times. But honestly, he said to me so many times, let's find a time when I'm in Holland. And he's now in Holland. So he's, of course, you can imagine the orchestra is not so busy at the moment. But I can't find the time. I've always, you know, I'm always so. But yeah, it's a good question because this is on my wish list for next year to have more lunch with my heroes.
Ben, what are you working on currently?
I have a lot of interesting things going on right now. Like you probably know about this amazing project we do in Helmond, what is a new housing project in we reached the front page of the New York Times with this project because it's all about the future of living. So what we do here in this neighborhood, we think the most intelligent and smartest neighborhood in the world. It's an almost an, I would say, a critical opposition of what the Cyberwalk Lab project was doing in Toronto. We are going only for the good things, like the things we mentioned. People who are going to live here, they're going to produce their own food. For 60%, they can produce their own food with the farmers in the neighborhood. Water is self-sustaining here. So we have grey water. We produce our own drinking water. It is energy neutral. We are even promoting the idea of energy production and with data. And the data who are protected, that's maybe the key of this project. We with a whole new cyber technology and blockchaining strategy, people can use their own data. It's not going to the bigger companies. And the data are used for, of course, measuring constantly how sustainable we keep the project over the years. But it is particularly dealing with the idea of getting people more out of their houses and that they do more active things with each other in order to make sure that you create a lively neighborhood. Helmond, nobody knows where it is. Helmond is in the area of Eindhoven. People say, yeah, Eindhoven, is that so important? The most of the patents in the world are produced, especially in Europe. I think we are number two or number one. Are produced in this area with Philips there, Tesla is there, many startup companies are there. And all these people who live there want to live more responsible, let's call it this way. So this is, I mean, one project, but then, you know, I'm doing a lot of nice things with Alessi. Even, you know, that I'm actively working on making products, product design. And yeah, we have a wonderful project in South Korea going on right now, a housing project as well. So, I mean, a lot of work. And I'm working on a fantastic competition in Shenzhen. Yeah, for an extension of the airport.
Talking to you sounds like a really, really nice future. And it's shaping a very nice picture.
It's also not easy at this time. I mean, I hope you have the same problem. It's a difficult time. I keep my mind, my head up, but it's difficult. We have to stay positive. That's what I mean.
And we are very happy to have the digital platforms as well, so we can still communicate with each other, see each other. I mean, this wouldn't be possible like 10, 15 years ago.
No, it is nice. It is nice. But so nice to meet you.
Thank you very much. Greetings to Amsterdam. It was a really great pleasure talking and listening to you. And I hope the picture of your future becomes reality.
Yeah. I will keep on following you. Just keep on following me. Yeah. Then we can talk in 5 years again. No, 2 years. No, in 2 years again. In 2 years.
Of course. We would love to.
Yeah, I know. So you gave me a lot of good messages today. Thank you.
Many thanks to our listeners as well. If there are any topics or speakers you are especially interested in, then please let us know at architects@jung.de. We heartily invite you to the upcoming Jung Architecture Talks podcasts. look them up on jung.de/architects and tune in.